Matthew chapter 5. Again, we're continuing our study on the Sermon on the Mount. And the Sermon on the Mount is, without a doubt, the most profound and revolutionary teaching ever given to humankind in all of history. And it is perhaps one of the most misunderstood Bible passages in all of the Bible. Those who are legalistically inclined might have a particularly difficult time getting to the heart of what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount. They might look at all the things that Jesus taught in Matthew 5 through 7 and conclude that these are new laws that Jesus is adding. And especially when you read the section that we've been looking at most recently from verses 17 to 48, because Jesus starts off each of these sections with, "You have heard it said," in other words, the Old Testament, the law says this, "but I tell you this." And so it sounds like what Jesus is doing is he's replacing the old law with some newer, better law, or he's adding to it. But that misses the heart of the matter. Clearly, in verse 17, Jesus said that he came to accomplish or to satisfy the law. He didn't come to add more. And he said in Matthew 22 that there are two great commands that sum up every other command in the whole Bible, and they are what? Love God and love people, right? Those two commands sum up everything that Jesus said. In John 13, or everything actually that the whole Bible says from beginning to end, in John 13, Jesus said this, "So now I am giving you a new commandment," and then he does give a new commandment. So what is it? Love each other. I'm giving you a new commandment. This is it. Love each other. He very clearly says, this is it. "Just as I have loved you, you should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples." And so ever since Jesus came and satisfied the law by his sacrifice on the cross 2,000 years ago, we as his followers are to live by the law of love. That's the law. That's the new commandment. Now, if we ask, in every situation, what does love look like? What does love look like in this situation with this person right now? And then depend on the Spirit of Jesus to help us do what is actually impossible for us to do, which is love somebody who's hard to love, then we will be fulfilling the law of God. It's pretty simple. One of the problems with seeing all of the teachings of Jesus as simply some more commands to satisfy, as I've already said in previous sermons, is that we tend then to reduce what Jesus said to legalistic requirements. And when we do that, we automatically look for loopholes. We look to do the minimum. And as long as we're doing the minimum, then we feel good about ourselves and we say, okay, well, I've done that, I've done this. So I guess I must be okay because I've performed all the things that Jesus said that I should perform. Let's take a look at what Jesus actually said in verses 38 to 42, and we'll ask the Spirit of Jesus to apply that to ourselves today. So if you aren't already there, Matthew chapter 5 and verse 38. "You have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat to. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask, and don't turn away from those who want to borrow. You have heard it said. So again, Jesus is referring to an Old Testament law here. And it's a law that became known as Lex Talionis, or the law of retaliation. It's so important that we understand the culture into which this law was written over 3,500 years ago, because revenge at that time to satisfy one's honor was the norm. It was actually seen as a good thing to do. So if you were hurt by somebody, then it was incumbent upon you, it was seen as honorable, as a matter of fact, for you to revenge your honor. Somebody hurt you, somebody hurt your family member, then you, in order to keep honor, to not lose face, would have to go and mete out revenge. That was the culture, but it was a culture that did not honor God, that part of the culture anyway. And so, in that era, in that place, revenge was out of control. And so that is what Exodus 21, where we're going to turn to right now, in 23 and 25, is where that law was written into. So Exodus 21 and verse 23, go all the way back, the Old Testament, Genesis, Exodus chapter 21 and verse 23. But if there is further injury, the punishment must match the injury. A life for a life, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot, a burn for a burn, a wound for a wound, a bruise for a bruise. Now, if you're reading this legalistically, out of context, you would think that this is what the Bible prescribes that we should do. But that totally misses the point. The whole point of this Old Testament law was to ensure that those who had injustice done to them didn't retaliate with something even greater. You know, you said something to me, and I am going to say something about you. I'm going to slander your name for the purpose of destroying your character. I'm going to take it one step further. And then, of course, if each of us has that same lex talionis, that same law of, or value of retaliation, we're going to go back and forth and we're going to up the ante each time. And that means that it's going to get greater every time until World War III is going to happen. Right? That's what's going to happen. Because we have to up the ante all the time. And so this was a culture that part of the culture that did not honor God. Now the law, that law was given as a prescription for what, or it's, sorry, it wasn't given as a prescription for what to do in case somebody hurts you. It was given to regulate justice in an era, in a culture where revenge was out of control. That's why it was written. It was written into that culture. It was a response to something that was already happening. And so the intent of the Old Testament law was, if somebody breaks your arm, well, you don't break their arm and then throw in a broken leg for good measure. Right? There's supposed to be an equalization. And the point was that it was to happen within the judicial system. So this wasn't for the purpose of meting out personal vendettas. It was within the legal judicial system. Now, by the time of Jesus, this lex talionis had become so twisted that the culture in which Jesus lived saw that this was actually something that was prescribed by God, not just something to prevent injustices, but this retaliation they thought was something that God prescribed. And so, now, once more, we need to remember that Jesus is not giving us new laws to satisfy. And I'm going to say that over and over again. Because he satisfied the law at the cross 2,000 years ago. And it would be easy for some of us who are legalistically inclined, and I'm one of them, to take these four statements in verses 38 to 42 and add them to our growing list of do's and don'ts and then blindly try to live according to them and then feel good about ourselves. And there are many problems with that kind of interpretation. The most obvious one is that we can do many of these things and still have a cold, hard, ugly, sinful heart. Now, many of you have probably heard the joke about a little boy standing up in his pew in church, and his mother is having this argument with him and trying to get him to sit down. You've heard that? Now, I've heard that probably 20, 30 times by different pastors, and I swore I would never tell that joke. But the situation demands that I do, and so I'm going to. And laugh at the appropriate time, please, even if you heard it before. The little boy stands up in church. He's standing on the pew, and he's causing a ruckus, and his mother whispers to him, "Sit down, son, please sit down." And the son obstinately stands up. He's defiant, and he there's no way he's sitting down. And the mom says, "Sit down, son, sit down." And he won't sit down. And finally she says, "Wait till we get home because your dad's going to deal with this." And so instantly he sits down. But he looks up at her defiantly, crosses his arms, and he says, "I may be sitting down on the outside, but on the inside I'm standing up." Thank you for laughing. Now, that's exactly what we do when we deal with the Sermon on the Mount as if Jesus is giving just some more laws to live by. We totally miss the point. Jesus is not giving more laws. What he's doing is he's saying, check your heart. What's your heart like? Because what he's saying is these are the kinds of ways that people will respond if they are living the kingdom kind of life right now. What he's saying is that if the seed of the gospel, that is, if the good news of the revelation of Jesus Christ, that he died and rose from the dead, has taken seed in our hearts, then we are going to be changed. We will not want to retaliate. As a matter of fact, what we will want to do is we will want to do what's best for the other person, even if it's someone that has hurt us. Now, that was revolutionary 3,500 years ago when Moses gave the law. It was revolutionary 2,000 years ago when Jesus taught this in Palestine, and it's revolutionary today in 2014. 1,000 years from now, if the Lord tarries, it's going to be revolutionary then, because there is no way that we can live that kind of life on our own initiative. God is calling us to something impossible, which is why we need Jesus. And when we depend on the Spirit of Jesus, the impossible becomes possible. That's the beauty of this story. Let's take a look at our text again. Matthew 5:38. "You have heard the law that says the punishment must match the injury, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say, do not resist an evil person. If someone slaps you on the right cheek, offer the other cheek also. If you are sued in court and your shirt is taken from you, give your coat as well. If a soldier demands that you carry his gear for a mile, carry it 2 miles. Give to those who ask and don't turn away from those who want to borrow." Now, I want you to imagine what it must have been like for those who were listening in when Jesus was speaking. Because the religious people had previously felt justified getting even and hating those who had hurt them. And so what Jesus says something that went totally against the stream of religious thought. He said, it is not okay to get revenge no matter what. It's not okay. As a matter of fact, he said, if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, offer them your left. If somebody takes you to court and sues you for your shirt, give them your coat also. If a soldier asks you to carry his stuff for a mile, well, carry it 2 miles. Don't argue. Just do it. And never turn away somebody who asks to borrow from you. Now, that kind of teaching would not have sat well with these religious people. It would have been a very hard pill for them to swallow. It would have seemed crazy. But we have to remember again that Jesus is not giving new laws. We also have to remember that just like with his teaching on anger, just like with his teaching on lust and adultery, he's speaking in hyperbole, exaggeration. And his point is that as Christ followers, we need to do what does not come naturally to us, which is to think about other people before ourselves. That's what Jesus is saying here. In our culture, we are all about our rights. We know our rights. We do not want anyone to infringe upon our rights. And I hope I don't shock anybody here right now, but what Jesus is saying that as Christ followers, you don't have any rights. You don't have rights. And that may shock some of you. You have no rights. I'm sorry. At least we are not to be living in such a way that we're constantly thinking about who's stepping on my toes or who's not stepping on my toes. And we need to become a people that is unoffendable so that we don't retaliate. And in order for that to happen, we need to allow the Holy Spirit to change us because we cannot do it. And so instead of wondering who's stepping on my toes this time, we should be thinking, how can I bless those around me? How can I love those who are not easy to love? What can I do to sort of give life to somebody who is feeling like there is no hope? One of the things Ruth does, she's in a habit of doing every morning, is she talks to God as soon as she gets up and she says, God, will you show me who you want me to love today? And many times it's someone that's not easy to love. Many times. Because it's easy to love somebody who loves you. It's not easy to love somebody who's trying to push you away. Well, that's Jesus' main point here. It's extreme love, it's extreme servanthood, even to those who are actively working against you. And that's hard for us to hear because we tend to feel justified when we're hurt in our anger. You know, she hurt me. So it's perfectly okay that I'm gossiping about her. He hurt me. So I can just slander with impunity. And we feel like we're okay doing that. It's okay that I have these hateful thoughts towards this person because they hurt me first. But according to Jesus, you don't have a right to those feelings. The only thing that you have a right for is to love. That's your right. That's my right. If you somehow feel justified in your anger or in your desire to get even, then you haven't fully experienced the grace of Jesus in your life in a real way. There's something missing. You know, Jesus is not asking us to do something that he's not willing to do himself. Remember, he was arrested unjustly. He was beaten for no reason. He was hung on a cross and crucified, and he didn't retaliate. As a matter of fact, from that cross, he looked down on the people who crucified him, and he said, "Father, would you forgive them?" How many of us could do that? In Romans chapter 8, or chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, "But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners." And so he didn't wait till we measured up before he started loving us. In verse 10 of Romans 5, it says, he did not wait to love us until we became his friends, but he actually loved us while we were his enemies. We actively worked against him, and yet he pursued us. He doesn't wait until we deserve his love before he loves us. So why do you think that we can't love others until they prove themselves to us? This is what God's calling us to. And now, lest you feel totally demoralized and you think that Jesus is telling us that we have to be doormats and let people walk all over us, I need you to know that Jesus is not referring to complete pacifism here. Because there are times when we need to fight. There are times when we need to argue. There are times when we need to say no to people who think it's okay to take advantage of us or somebody else over and over again without any consequences. And there are times when we need to fight against injustices in the world. Ruth was in a car accident many years ago when we were still in Alberta. And she was rear-ended. She got whiplash. And so we worked with the insurance company. They made us an offer, and we felt like the offer wasn't enough to take care of Ruth's physiotherapy over the next while, and so we negotiated. We said, "Sorry, we don't think that's enough," and so we negotiated for a higher amount, and it's a good thing that we did, because now 15 years later she's still struggling with that, and it wasn't nearly enough to fix that. And so someone with a legalistic view of Jesus' teaching here would say, well, we should have just accepted what they offered in the first place and not argued our point. But that's missing the heart of the matter. We pay insurance premiums so that we can be taken care of in situations like this, and so it's okay to negotiate for what's going to take care of us. The issue at hand in Jesus' teaching is always the condition of our hearts. We must not, what Jesus is saying is, don't give in to the toxic mindset that's always looking to get even, or that's always looking to get more than our share, and that's continually looking out for ourselves at the expense of other people. And we need to become aware that we have an inner voice and we have an outer voice. You know, you have an inner voice and you have an outer voice. The inner voice is that voice that you don't want anyone else to hear. Right? The outer voice is the one that, you know, I'm doing my outer voice right now, and my inner voice is saying, "Jeff, you're such an idiot," or whatever. And I don't want you to hear that story I just told you. But we have this inner voice, and it's not just our outer voice that gets us into trouble. It's our inner voice. And we need to be aware of what it is, because it's our inner voice that really shows the character of our heart. What am I saying or thinking in my head about the people who are around me? I'm saying all these nice things, pleasant things, but inside, what am I thinking? Because that's what really shows the character of our hearts. So whether or not somebody's hurt us or is trying to sue us or you feel like someone in authority is taking advantage of you in the situation that Jesus gave, it was a soldier, or somebody wants to borrow from you. Whatever the case, whatever the situation, Jesus is saying, don't give in to toxic heart attitudes because they hurt your relationship with both God and with others down here. And actually, they don't just hurt your relationship, they destroy you. How many of you have stayed up, tried to sleep at night, and you're running over things in your head? Somebody said something that was hurtful to you, somebody did something that was hurtful, and you stay up at night and you can't sleep and you're mulling this thing over and you just can't let it go. And it destroys you. Yeah, lots of people putting up your hands. You can't let it go and it's destroying you. And what we want is we want to get even. We want to settle things. We want the books balanced, and we think in order to balance the books, then justice needs to be met, and that means that I need to meet it. What was Jesus' attitude? Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. For God called you to do good, even if it means suffering, just as Christ suffered for you. He is your example, and you must follow in his steps. He never sinned nor deceived anyone. He did not retaliate when he was insulted, nor threaten revenge when he suffered. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. Put that in the sticky side of your brain. He left his case in the hands of God who always judges fairly. That's the key. Over to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and verse 17. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Dear friends, never take revenge. Listen to this. Leave that to the righteous anger of God. For the scriptures say, I will take revenge. I will pay them back, says the Lord. Instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they're thirsty, give them something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals of shame on their head. You want to get even with someone? Serve them. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. This is key. Both Peter and Paul reiterate what God said in the Old Testament in Deuteronomy 32:35, that it is not our job to take vengeance. That is God's job. And so we need to leave that to God. When we try to get even, what we do is we try to steal God's job from him. And that is idolatry. What we do when we try and steal God's job from him by getting even if it's just running things over and over and over and over and over again in our minds, what we're doing is we're saying, God, I don't trust you to be God. I don't believe you. Sure, your word says that you are the judge, that vengeance is yours and not mine, but I don't think you're going to do a good enough job, so I need to wrest control from you and do it myself. And that's idolatry. That's taking God's job. That's attributing something that only God can do to yourself. But we tend to justify our toxic attitudes. We think that we deserve to feel the way that we do because somebody hurt us, and so it's okay to slander them. It's okay to gossip because they hurt me. That Jesus is saying it is never okay. And what does he say the antidote is? He says the antidote is to serve them. Ask God how you can love them. Ask God how you can very practically bless them. That's the antidote. And I know this totally goes against how we naturally feel, but it's the way of Jesus. And contrary to what many people think, the natural way does not bring us peace. We do not get peace when we get even. You know, we think we do, which is why there are so many movies about revenge. How many movies are there that come out every year about revenge? And we love watching those because something inside us just calls out, we want justice. We know that justice has to be met. And so when we watch a movie where that includes revenge, it includes somebody getting even and setting the record straight, we say, yeah. Because there is a God-given desire in each of us that justice has to be met. We need justice in order to have resolution. The problem comes when we take God's job from him. Because it's God who metes out revenge, vengeance, who will repay, says the Lord. He is the one. When we try and take control away from God, we are saying that we don't believe that he is big enough to make things right at the end. And he is. Some very good friends of ours had their young adult son murdered about a year ago when I was in Israel. And Taylor was 21 years old, and he was house-sitting in the home of somebody of questionable character. There was actually a grow-op there. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Somebody thought that he wasn't there and tried to break into the house, and Taylor heard something, and he opened the curtains to see the guy shot through the window and killed him. It was devastating. And our friends have been struggling with this for the last year. He's a pastor. And I can't imagine what it would be like to experience something like that and then try to forgive. How could you forgive someone who just took the life of your child? You know, they lost everything. They had plans together as a family. Taylor had plans. They lost all of that. They could no longer spend time with him. Well, Paul and Wendy and their kids chose, in spite of their feelings, to forgive someone who didn't deserve to be forgiven. And Taylor's sister actually said, there's no point in destroying the lives of two young men. One's enough. And so they chose together as a family, instead of harboring forgiveness and resentment, they chose instead that they were going to forgive. And my friend Paul sat in the same room with Jesse, the killer, and talked with him. And he said very clearly and firmly, he said, I am angry because you took the life of my son. But I'm also going to choose, because of all that God has forgiven of me, to forgive you. And Jesse just broke down and he just wept. And the two of them hugged. And that is so amazing, and it puts us to so much shame. What kinds of petty things do we harbor in our hearts against other people? We want to lock people into this prison of unforgiveness, thinking that we're hurting them when what we're actually doing is hurting ourselves. We're destroying ourselves. We're destroying other relationships when we choose to not forgive. And the way of Jesus is to forgive even when everything inside us wants to get even. The best revenge is to take the high road and invite others to join you there. That's another one of Ruth's famous sayings. The best revenge is to take the high road and invite others to join you there. You know, contrary to popular belief, there is no peace in getting even. None. There's only peace in forgiveness. Let's pray. Father, I just thank you that you have shown the way. You forgave us, even though we didn't deserve to be forgiven. Even while we were still your enemies, Lord, you pursued us with your love. You made a way. And Lord, I just pray that this morning, even this morning, if we're harboring things we shouldn't harbor towards other people, Lord, that you would help us to just lay that at the foot of the cross and to say, because you have forgiven me so much, I'm going to choose to forgive that person who hurt me. I'm not going to hold it against them anymore. And I'm going to let you be God and not try and wrestle control from you. As the worship team is singing this one last song, if you want prayer this morning, I'm going to ask the staff and some of the deacons to come at the front here. If you would like prayer, come to the front and we'll pray for you.